Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Take two, because Devin forgot to plug in her microphone. Throwing that
which
right out
means
there.
You missed out on some really good banter that Kate and I just had, which
it
was
cute.
Great.
She doesn't
listen to me anymore, guys.
I know,
if that's what you want to know. So
accurate, so true.
Our episode's on time this week. For
Woo!
The moment, we have our shit together.
Mm-hmm.
It's also back to school season, so yay. Which means, you know what that means? What comes next after back to school season?
October and spooky season.
That too, but I'm also thinking wash your fucking hands season. Everyone's going to get sick.
That's more
important. Everyone's going to get sick. I know it.
Yeah. The Rona's going to come. The flu's going to come. The GI crap is going to come, which is just the bane of my existence. So everybody
that reminds me. Last year on the first day of school, my boy missed the first day of kindergarten because he had a GI bug.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Talk about having to call the school secretary to call your kid out sick on the first day of school. That was interesting. Well, first of all, do we have Patreons?
We actually do have one singular Patreon.
A patron.
A patron. Yeah, sorry, everybody.
People that yell at us. We got a patron.
We know, everybody. We freaking know, okay? And we have a newbie by the name of Rhonda Morrison. Hi, Rhonda.
Rhonda.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, Rhonda.
We so love and appreciate you. And you want to know the critter that you are? I have a good one. You are an Allah or Hala, depending on where you're from. And
Hala.
They are a female mythological creature, typically from like Bulgarian, Macedonian, or Serbian folklore. And they are considered spirits of bad weather whose main purpose is to lead hail-producing thunderclouds and storms in the direction of crops to just fuck up everybody's shit. It's like super ominous. They also, though, which is kind of cooler, are responsible for the tides and eclipses and like a bunch of like moon stuff. So I thought that was really cool and spooky.
Spooky dookie.
So thank you, girlfriend. We love you.
Well, welcome to the fam.
Welcome, baby. Welcome.
So to get back to what Kate had just briefly mentioned to me that none of y'all heard, but we're going to announce it. We are here tonight to talk part two of the Lindsay Clancy trial, because not only is it important, it is also our most played episode in the 5 years that we have done this show.
Which is huge. Thank you guys so
much. Holy shit.
We've got a lot of newbies.
I'd like to say that that's a testament to me, but it's really not. It's a testament to people are engaged in this case because of how torn I think people are,
mm-hmm.
how tragic the situation is,
mm-hmm.
and how some people are trying to educate themselves on postpartum, that whole period and, you know, and everything that can happen to it and the mental health system and all of that. I think it's just such a
impactful.
It's a discussion that needs to be had, mm-hmm. right? Regardless of how this whole thing turns out, it is bringing up a lot that needs to be talked about in our system, right?
That is so well said. Yes, absolutely. And that's why we do what we do, too, is to raise awareness to a lot of different things. And as you just, you know, said so well, this is something that hasn't been talked about enough. And the fact that it's getting so much attention now, you know, like you said, it's such a tragic and horrifying moment in time that occurred, and this the horrible things that happened to this poor family. But it's, you know, it's something that is triggering conversations, which is
absolutely
what needs to happen around.
And you know, it's triggering conversations for our mental health providers.
Mm-hmm.
It's triggering conversations for mental health systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's triggering conversations for awareness.
Yes.
I also think it's triggering conversations to circle back to how important it is to document accurate medical records.
Oh, my God. Yes. There's been so right? much coming out of the out of it. Just for simple verbiage or inflections in your notes that can be interpreted many different ways, and people are seeing that now. It's scary.
And you,
it's scary.
And you as a provider, I mean, you know, we were, even as nurses, we were all taught, you know, to document, or did number one, document or it didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we were also taught document as if you might have to read this off in court one day, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
But I think often that gets lost.
It does, especially as we're asked to do more and more and more. And from a productivity standpoint, and from a efficiency standpoint, it's one of those things that you don't always think about in the day to day. But those moments are the ones that get dragged out into the light in a courtroom scenario. So it's one of those things that you just have to ingrain in yourself. And I, for one, found myself this week documenting instead of denies XYZ, I'm saying denies X, denies Y, denies Z, just to make sure it's fucking crystal ass clear in case somebody else reads it one day.
So for those of you that may not know what we're talking about, part of what we're going to talk about in part two, if you want to go back and listen to part one, you can. Quick recap. You know, we talked about the events of that were performed and what happened on January 24th of 2023 when the three Clancy children, Cora, Dawson, and Callan, were murdered.
Go listen to part one if you have not, because it's a good summary of the night. We won't rehash
that. We did the summary of the night, but then we spent time going through what happened from pretty much September of 2022 up through January and the events that led to that and Lindsay's continued deterioration of her mental health state. One of the what we want to talk about tonight is a little bit of the trial. Again, it's still ongoing. Here we are 2 weeks later. It's still ongoing. We might see a ruling the end of the week. Who knows what we might see a decision. It could be early next week. But so we'll talk briefly a little bit about the trial. But then I want to get into, because, again, we are a med crime show. So while we are true
true crime, baby.
We are true crime. We want to still hone in on the medical aspect. And
absolutely.
So with that, I want to discuss the civil lawsuit that is currently pending.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of you that don't know what we're referencing when we're talking about documentation, in part one, I mentioned a lot about Dr. Jennifer Tufts.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned a lot about her because Lindsay saw her frequently in those several months leading up to the night of January 24th. And so because of that, she had to testify. It was probably about 2 weeks ago or so that she testified. She was a witness for the prosecution. She testified that Lindsay did not show areas of psychosis, that she did not show symptoms, or that she did not show symptoms of mania, reasons as to why she was not, you know, bipolar and, you know, all of those types of things. It was a very, I think she was on the stand for like a full day, at least. It was like an hour or two with the prosecution, but she had a 5-hour cross-examination from the defense attorney, Kevin Reddington.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're referring to when we talk about how to document why it's important, because this, I say poor girl, this young woman who's just a few years younger than us, I think she's like 36 or something.
Yep.
Number one, I felt for her because she was torn apart and she did not testify very well. But as a provider, this was a big lesson, right? This was a big lesson, not only in the decisions that she made, that's what we're going to get into when I discuss the civil lawsuit, but her documentation was very poor. I think it comes down to lack of experience. And I think this whole thing, it just dumped experience all on her. And this is what can happen when you don't get your stuff together and do it thoroughly.
It's one of those things that kind of changes your day-to-day as you know it as a provider. It will
because it's
her.
Like once you've been there, you do not want to go back.
Yep, never want to do it again.
And unfortunately, Jennifer Tuss is going to have to continue to testify separately. Not, you know, she's done this in the criminal case, but she's got a lawsuit pending on her and others. So mm-hmm. she's going to have to continue to testify and justify her decisions. But one of the things that's important here is the documentation. So in her testimony, she talked about how the system that she had checkboxes. And the system that she is using to document, that's through the system that where she's employed, has a lot of checkboxes for options. And so sometimes she might have had to choose deteriorating because stayed the same or improved weren't the best option.
Right.
Some things might have gotten better. She was trying to pick the best option out of what she had, and sometimes not allowing for additional, emphasizing more detail in additional comments, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes she would just check the box and move on to the next question. Again, check a box, move on to the next question. So there's been a lot of testimony about how the documentation does not reflect true visual of what those visits looked like, and was it a true representation of what Lindsay was experiencing? And then, of course, the big moment that blew up that went viral on social media was a time that she did dictate in some additional comments, came down to when she testified that on a visit that Lindsay did not have pressured speech.
Right.
Pressured speech is one of the symptoms, I believe it was, of mania that mm-hmm. they were referring to. And so Dr. Tufts was trying to state, not this, not that, right? But she didn't say not with every time.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the first symptom was, but it was not something, comma, pressured speech, comma,
right.
Maybe hallucinations. So like the way she was writing it, but in her testimony, she reads it and she reads it the way it's written. And then she catches herself.
Mm-hmm.
So she catches herself. So then when the attorney's like, I'm sorry, what was that? You just read what I'm pointing out, right? And then so she goes to read it by saying not this, not pressured speech, but the word not was not there. And, you know, like she was her end stating was you were reading it correctly, but your interpretation is incorrect.
Right.
And that, I think, is the biggest takeaway, is that mm-hmm. to leave your notes leave nothing up to interpretation.
Right. I think she said at one point, too, like, well, I know what it says, but I also know what I meant. And this is what
correct.
I meant. And it's
correct.
Like, you can't write hoping that they'll get what you mean.
Correct.
You got to write it so clearly that there is absolutely no question and no margin for interpretation.
I think the actual words were, I don't care what it
says.
That's
what
I
it
know
was.
What it meant. And
yes.
it was, oh, honey.
Oh, no, no, no. That's not how this works.
You need
babe.
To care what it says
yeah.
because that's your legal document that's uh-huh. now in evidence. So,
yeah.
So we're going to get a little bit into the details with Jennifer Tufts, but that was a day that did not suit well. And I think that that's something that's coming out of this also mm-hmm. for providers. That's just, you have big cases like this where there's thousands of people watching, millions of people watching, and you just weren't able to stand behind your work, right? Because it wasn't documented appropriately. So that's just something that's come out of it, not only with the discussion, but as providers and as nurses too, you know, we just have to really think. It really brings to light, like, oh shit, I need to write my notes as if someone's going to read that aloud in court, and there
yes.
has to be no question as to what I meant.
That's a huge
I think away. I saw a quick thing on social media, a quick reel stating like a physician was writing similar to what you said. You said denies this, denies that.
Yes.
The reel that I saw said patient denies all of the following.
Yeah.
Like,
so that's
so that way they
good
wrote
way.
That.
Yep.
Patient denies all of the following.
Smart.
And then listed it out. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. For sure, because initially it said the same thing. Patient denies fever, comma,
yes.
chills, whatever. But that comma, it's
yep.
like, well, wait a minute.
It
so,
leaves
yeah.
it up for interpretation. And it seems arbitrary. Those commas, those little things, those nuances seem so arbitrary when we're talking about it now. But I promise you it's not. Because
those commas we learned in fifth grade
yep,
are important.
Will, they will make you or break you in a court case, for sure.
So it's crazy. So that's definitely something that's come to light on the records as to the accuracy in making sure that that's, you know, significant. Mm-hmm. At this point, when we touched base, when we did part one, the prosecution was still presenting its case. The prosecution has rested since then. Mm-hmm. The defense brought a few witnesses. And at this point in time, as you're listening, the defense has rested their case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of got a little bit of feedback on the part one. You know, some people were wondering if we spoke too soon about Patrick and whatever. And I'm just going to say, I don't know if we spoke too soon, right? As far as would there be a trial down the line bringing some evidence against Patrick?
Nobody knows.
Who knows? Nobody knows. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But in this trial, the trial that is on right now, we did not speak too soon because the evidence is not focusing on Patrick.
That's the thing.
Kevin Reddington did not call Patrick back to the stand.
Nope.
He did not bring to light further information, you know, that points the finger at him. He produced experts that spoke about Lindsay's mental status.
Because that's what's in question, not whether or not she did it.
Correct.
It is the what is in question is what was her state of mind and was she in psychosis or not? Correct.
So, correct. And one of his, what I want to bring up is the forensic psychiatrist of Dr. Resnick. So I want to just talk about him for a minute because I did not realize how profound this guy was. So Dr. Resnick testified, I think it was on Friday. I think it was Friday morning he testified. Mm-hmm. And he testified as a defense expert witness. Do you know anything about this guy? Did you see any part of that?
I think I saw clips, but not a ton.
So he testified via Zoom. And this guy is like apparently the forensic psychiatrist of psychiatrists.
Damn.
Because when they were kind of one of the things that goes through with the trial is they bring upon like they talk about their resume, like their qualifications, their curriculum vitae, I think they call it, like to just show why are they here as an expert.
Yes.
Not only just his education was obviously very impressive going to Yale and whatnot, but he's won many awards. He's been doing this work for decades. But some of his cases that he has testified on, so he has some pretty significant high-profile cases that he has been a expert witness on, sometimes for the defense, sometimes for the prosecution. But I'm going to just list off a few of them here because they're pretty like, whoa. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, shit.
Susan Smith. Andrea Yates,
which sound we can familiar? All draw a lot of parallels with this case, honestly.
Scott Peterson.
Whoa!
Brian Mitchell was the accused for the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping.
Yes, okay. Yep, I just saw a documentary about that.
The Unabomber, the Theodore Kaczynski.
Okay, wow. Ted Kaczynski.
And also the Aurora movie theater shooting.
Oh my God, that was horrifying when that happened. Of course, how could I forget? Jesus.
And last but not least, there's many more, but again, high profile, Casey Anthony.
Oh my God, Casey Anthony, don't get
so
me started.
So he has done expert witness testimony on both sides, prosecution and defense. For several cases. So the fact that he is in this high profile case is to no surprise. But he did have a testimony that basically said that he felt like Lindsay was in a state of psychosis at that point in time, that she was having command hallucinations. We will see where that goes.
Okay.
The last thing, you know, the last two parts for the trial before we get into the civil lawsuit The prosecution has brought some expert witnesses. They're still in the middle of that. So I guess there's like a, you can, the prosecution rested, the defense went, they've rested, but now they're doing rebuttal expert witnesses.
Right, right.
One of them was their own forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Mack.
Okay.
That was intense to watch.
Okay.
He did not testify as well. And I'm actually, this is my opinion. Okay. He's obviously a forensic psychiatrist, so he's qualified. He's a hell of a lot more qualified than I am.
Sure.
But he seems to have little to no experience in postpartum and even in adults in general. All of his stuff is like children, pediatric, adolescents.
So like, are you really?
They looked at his resume and on cross-examination, it went into detail. This guy sounds very, very experienced and very qualified in several different areas. I'm going to say not this one.
Yeah.
Not this one.
Not adult and not postpartum.
And if this is going to piss you off, because this pissed me off, he testified on the stand that the postpartum period is 4 weeks.
Ha! Sir? Sit your ass down. Exactly how many babies have you pushed out of your vagina or
and
out
remember,
of your abdomen?
You need to remember, on the panel of the 18 jurors, we don't know which ones are going to be male and which ones are going to be female, but to make up the 12. But of the 18 jurors sitting there listening to this testimony, 12 of them are women. 12 of them.
Fucking believable, sir.
So you're at least going to have a jury of 6 women. And you just pissed them all off, I guarantee it.
I'm going to hold your hand while I say this, sir. You
Kevin Reddington's like, I'm sorry, what? Four weeks?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, my Lord.
He pointed that out for sure.
Sir, unbelievable.
So the other big development with the trial is definitely some kerfuffle. And I'm using that word, kerfuffle.
Not a kerfuffle.
Yeah, it's a big kerfuffle because there was a lot of updates today. So today's Monday. Right. So that's big across your social medias. There was a motion for a mistrial today, which no one wants.
Nobody wants
a mistrial. No one wants even a hung jury.
No.
There's a likelihood we could get that. I still think there's a likelihood we could get that.
Yeah.
But no one wants to not even get it to the jury. Right. Like if the jury truly cannot can decide to a unanimous decision, at least that, again, just justifies how complex this whole thing is.
Yes.
But no one wants an actual mistrial that's not even going to get to the jury. Right. That means the jury has listened for weeks and they don't even get to deliberate and have discussion amongst themselves.
Yep. And there's no potential justice.
Think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, it's starting all over again and it's starting all over again with a whole new jury. Right. Like they'd have to pick a whole new jury, which it already took over a week to choose this. And that's before millions of people watched the damn thing on TV.
Oh, my God.
So it's a whole mess. In my opinion, the prosecution, I'm not going to say my opinion is that they're trying to get a mistrial because I don't think that's legit true. I don't know.
How would that benefit the prosecution? I want to know.
There's theories, and again, it's not mine, but there's theories out there that they feel like they're losing. So we want to start over. And how do we do that? But get a mistrial.
Wow.
And the only reason that theory is out there is because last week after we did do this episode, I think it was the defense called one of their first few witnesses and they had called Patrick's mother, Lindsay's ex-mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And so she's testifying for the defense. And in the cross-examination, one of the attorneys asked her, you know, so you're of the Catholic faith. And so you're aware that the Catholic religion deems murder a mortal sin.
Uh-huh.
And that immediately caused a recess and a sidebar.
Sidebars.
And the jury was told, you cannot take that into consideration. You have to get it out of your head.
Yeah,
because that's definitely crossing the lines of church and state. Religion has no basis in this case. So
gotcha. Okay.
The problem is, so that number one could have caused a mistrial right there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Kevin Reddington, you know, because depending on, I guess this area of where they are in South Boston is a significant Catholic community,
which
doesn't surprise
regardless.
Me. I mean, it's Boston, Irish Catholic,
yeah,
right?
Irish,
like, so
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Doesn't surprise me. My family member that's in the courtroom, Irish Catholic. So like it doesn't surprise me. They're all there. Right. But So that was a big, that right there could have caused a mistrial, because that was the prosecution deliberately asking a question that should not even have been, you know, worded.
You really can't do that, guys.
Today, there was an expert witness testifying for the prosecution, and Mortelson was again brought up. Mortelson was again brought up today.
By the prosecution again?
Well, it was the prosecution's witness. They were stating it in the, if you remember when in part one, I discussed how, you know, it's alleged that Lindsay has stated that when she was killing her children, she said, go to God, baby, go to God.
Yes.
And so it came up during that, and how he was saying that when he evaluated her Catholic faith and how murders are viewed that way. So that's how it came up in his answer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, immediately, as soon as those two words were said, immediate sidebar. Get the jury out of the room. We're taking a recess. And that's when a formal motion for a mistrial was done, was today.
Gotcha. Yep.
The judge denied it because, again, no one wants to start this thing over.
No.
But he gave the prosecution like hell and was like, I'm giving specific instructions to the jury that they are again to disregard this. But now the jury has heard this twice. Like,
how much can you just disregard? Like, when you hear something, right. I feel like it's an unrealistic expectation for someone to just like forget some.
Correct.
Sometimes critical pieces of evidence.
And I'm sure out of those 18 people that there is a decent number of people on there that are Irish Catholic. And so now that they're like, are they like, oh my goodness, like, you know, now I'm battling if I go not guilty by reason of insanity, am I promoting a moral sin? Right.
Right.
Like, and they're dealing with their own internal turmoil. Right?
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's the real fear there. He sent them home for the day. He sent the jury home for today. They're going to pick up with that witness tomorrow. And the judge said, listen, you better talk to your witness and we are to not go there. That, you know, you need to re-talk to your witness in the sternest language possible is what he said. So I don't know. We'll see what tomorrow brings. But it's not going so well for the prosecution just as far as doing things or having things said that are allowed as far as that goes, because that's now twice that it's been brought up.
That's not good.
You know, it's not good. So that's our recap of the trial. Okay. Again, not going down the Patrick rabbit hole. That's going to be a whole separate thing. I still stick to my guns on where we are with that.
Yeah.
Again,
me too.
What I will stick to my guns on, because this is my opinion, I think he was a shitty husband.
Yeah.
100%.
But it does not mean that
it does not make a murderer.
Orchestrated a fake suicide attempt and psychosis episode featuring his wife.
If down the line someone opens up an investigation on this man and they charge him with something, you know, and there's a trial and all of that, good, due process.
Yes,
but
wonderful. But
that's,
as it
again,
stands right
not
now,
not this trial that we're watching.
That
not
is
this
not
trial.
What we're talking about. And
correct.
Some of the stuff
I've
heard.
I got questions, though. I still got questions.
There's a lot. And you can Google it. You know, I've gone down a couple of rabbit holes, too, and been like, you know what? There are some things where I'm like, that's a good question. You know, that's a good question. I don't have a great answer for that. But
correct.
Sometimes in life, you just don't. You just don't get it.
And
sometimes things don't make sense.
And so when there are inconsistencies in stories, I think the thing to remember is that these are real humans that have to recall a real traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
Parts may be blocked out.
100%.
I know when, you know, you're going through something, you don't remember every detail.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you can't remember everything that was said. You can't remember, you know, everything that you saw. Was it how it was? Or are you remembering differently? And then you've just told it so many times that now that feels like the truth. And this is also 3 years later. So
that's
it's
right.
Just like...
And 99% of us, thank whatever powers are up there, are fortunate enough that we have no clue what it feels like or was like to live through that moment. And we are very fortunate, like I said. And I do not presume to know what I would do, what I would remember, what I wouldn't remember, what I would say, what I wouldn't say, how I would phrase things, how I wouldn't phrase things, how I would act with the police, how I would do X, Y, Z. Because I don't know that there's any set normal for any of that. So calm down, everybody. Calm down.
Okay. Still got questions.
I got questions.
Still got questions. I still got questions. Yep. I still want to know, you know, why her DNA is not on the exercise bands.
That's
I mean, a great question. Right? Let's just throw that question out there.
It should be. Okay. Right?
So that's just one of my many questions. However, where we are now is with everything that we've recapped, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to shift gears back to some of the medical stuff. And why some of the specifics as to what is in the civil lawsuit, which is still pending. Obviously, I think it goes without saying that there's a pretty high chance, even though they're supposed to be totally separate, I do think that there is a pretty high chance that, you know, what happens from this trial may influence the civil lawsuit. You know, if she's deemed not criminally responsible, then that shows that she had a psychotic break. And did all this stuff in the civil lawsuit lead up to that and, you know, could have been prevented and all of that. So, but if she is deemed criminally responsible, could it help the providers?
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're supposed to be separate, but, you know. So the plaintiff is Lindsay Clancy. Patrick also has his own separate lawsuit. And the defendants are Jennifer Tufts, Zobeida Diaz, Rebecca Gelada, Aaliyah Goodhart, Aster Mental Health, South Shore Health System, McLean Hospital, and Women and Infants Hospital of Rhode Island. Many, if not all of those, were discussed briefly as far as touching points in part one. Not all of them, but basically those are all the medical systems and or providers that Lindsay saw more than once or continually or, you know, while she was inpatient, that have allegedly failed her in the complaint. So you can find this. It's a 29-page document. I've actually never read a full lawsuit, so it's been, you know, kind of interesting. So basically this action, it's stated in the introduction, it's for personal injury and loss of consortium brought by Lindsay M. Clancy. It arises from the catastrophic failure of multiple medical providers to properly diagnose, treat, and monitor Lindsay's severe postpartum psychiatric condition, despite her repeated, desperate pleas for help and her family's persistent efforts to obtain adequate care. So that's just the first paragraph in the introduction. So it goes into the different parties, but again, for the sake of time, you know, we're not going to go into each one specifically. We've mentioned Jennifer Tufts right already. Aaliyah Goodhart, she was the psychiatrist that was at McLean when Lindsay was inpatient there for for the few days. Okay. Let's see, Zobeida Diaz is the psychiatrist that was at the Women and Infants Hospital in Rhode Island. Rebecca Gelada is the nurse practitioner, the psychiatric nurse practitioner that she saw when she was at the South Shore Clinic. Mm-hmm. And then there's the actual corporations. So not only are there the specific providers, but then the defendants are the actual system in itself. McLean Hospital, Women and Children's. So it's the system in itself. Pretty. So it goes into a lot of facts on their history. It goes into facts as far as who Lindsay was prior to all this and her family and her history as far as a labor and delivery and their family and their children. Then it starts also with she had a prior postpartum history. So it didn't just all come to head like out of nowhere after the birth of Callan. It did. She did have some evidence of postpartum mental illness after each child. Mm-hmm. During her first pregnancy with Cora, she experienced anxiety due to abnormal ultrasound findings that later resolved. So she got very anxious to having, you know, her first pregnancy with Cora. And there was a kind of abnormality in that. It did later resolve, but she still had some anxiety even after during the postpartum period, but was able to return to work part-time after that. And she breastfed for a whole year after without incident. But some anxiety did start there. Her second child, Dawson, with that postpartum, she was initially had increased energy. Patrick describes it as that she had manic behavior for multiple days after the birth of Dawson. She had a lot of episodes of decluttering, obsessively cleaning, discarding items, that she felt amazing and on top of things. Her thoughts raced, and that she constantly felt pressure to be active.
So mania?
Those are some potential signs of mania. Mm-hmm. Her anxiety also emerged around 2 months postpartum after the birth of Dawson. She was offered Zoloft by a psychiatrist at that point, but she declined due to concerns about breastfeeding. Her symptoms did seem to resolve through exercise, healthy diet, meditation, and some therapy sessions. So these postpartum episodes, including the hypomanic symptoms following Dawson's birth, were critical indicators that should have alerted competent psychiatric providers to the risk of bipolar disorder and the potential for more severe postpartum psychiatric complications after each subsequent pregnancy. That's just stated as her history and why they're saying that they were below the standard of care. They did not recognize her history that could have potentially, you know, gave thoughts to a more significant reaction. Her third pregnancy and that postpartum period is obviously where everything is the focus. So initially, you know, they're stating that she might have had some episodes of hypomania shortly after Callan's birth. Her mental health and anxiety didn't really come till the fall. But they're stating that Lindsay demonstrated significant activation and hypomanic behavior, including extensive program of exercise beginning only 1 week after delivery. She woke up every day before the children at 4 a.m., ran 3 miles, did spinning for 30 minutes on a Peloton, and then 30 minutes of aerobics.
Whoa.
On the 4th of July on 2022, which was only about 5 weeks after her delivery, she ran a five-mile race.
Wow.
So she definitely did a lot, like got right back into the exercise, but she exercised a lot before. But these are just parts that are listed in the civil lawsuit as to what was missed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they also talk about, you know, really diving into the whole Beachbody thing that came up in court. That was actually quite comical. They were going down a rabbit hole of that. And I was like, talk about a tangent here, people.
Jesus.
And then there's the next section gets into her desperate efforts to seek help. Which again, we talked about in part one, but the civil lawsuit goes into much detail about it. They're stating at about 12 weeks postpartum, Lindsay's mood switched suddenly to anxiety and depression. She had debilitating anxiety, insomnia, sleeping only approximately 3 hours a night, and exhaustion during the day, no motivation, and could not exercise. And again, this was a girl who 5 weeks postpartum is running 5 miles. So
right.
it was like a switch. Everything about her body felt heavy and a required effort. It was a chore to get dressed or shower, and her parents came from out of state to help care for the children. And then this is where she had her first, leading up to her first appointment on September 12th with Dr. Tufts. So it gets into every bullet point of every appointment. So I'm going to skip to that part, and I'm going to go to where it talks about their failures. So some of the failures as to why they're stating that this is negligent. So we have for Women and Infants Hospital and Dr. Diaz's failure to properly treat Lindsay. On December 20th of 22, Lindsay admitted herself to the Partial Hospitalization Day Program in Rhode Island. This is intended for patients with postpartum depression. And the chief complaint from Lindsay was that she felt numb and crazy depressed. She reported crazy depressed, numb to all emotion, can't feel love, and that her life is becoming a disaster. And at this point, this is like 3.5 months from her first initial, like, not feeling well. She had lost, she felt that her life was becoming a disaster, that she couldn't feel fear, and that she was messed up beyond repair. She had lost 15 pounds in a month, had no motivation, and reported that it takes all effort in the world just to breathe.
Oh, what a horrible feeling she's describing. That's so upsetting.
So her Edinburgh postnatal depression scale, which has been talked about a lot during the trial, was a 23, which indicates severe depression.
Mm-hmm.
Her GAD-7, which is a generalized anxiety disorder, was a 21, which was the higher threshold for the most severe category.
Wow.
Despite the elevated scores, the attending psychiatrist, Dr. Diaz, concluded that Lindsay had no postpartum depression and rejected a bipolar diagnosis because of no history of hypomania or psychosis or family history. They're stating in the lawsuit that this conclusion was negligent because Dr. Diaz failed to obtain an adequate history. Her own notes documented that Lindsay's sister had experienced postpartum anxiety, which makes a relevant family psychiatric history that should have been explored. Had Dr. Diaz properly inquired about Lindsay's early postpartum period, she would have learned of the hypomanic episode that began immediately after delivery. Dr. Diaz also failed to recognize that Lindsay's providers had previously considered bipolar disorder as documented in her records. Mm. We've also got the statement where Dr. Diaz felt that her symptoms were due to over-medication and recommended weaning her off the Seroquel. The clinical team at Women and Infants positioned that Lindsay's symptoms were more pharmacologically induced than purely depressive. Her assessment and plan documented that the Women Infant Health Hospital is not a suitable treatment facility for Lindsay, yet Dr. Diaz failed to recommend or arrange appropriate alternative treatment and instead discharged Lindsay only after one day of treatment with inadequate follow-up care. So wow. That's a pretty big deal. That was almost like they're seeming like, okay, you came in this one day. It's like a brush off. You're not appropriate, but this is a brush off. We kind of get into McLean Hospital and Amelia Goodhart. So following the Seroquel reduction that was recommended by the Women and Infants, Lindsay's suicidal ideation resurged. And by December 29th, 2022, Lindsay told her husband, I can't tough it out anymore. I need to go to McLean. So that's 9 days after being rejected at the Women and Infants Hospital. Mm-hmm. She went to the MGH emergency room. And on December 31st, she was admitted herself to McLean Hospital, the nation's top-ranked psychiatric hospital due to her severe depression and suicidal ideation. Her admitting symptoms included passive suicidal ideation, feeling detached, hopelessness, depression, no appetite or energy to perform activities of daily living, no motivation, anhedonia, racing thoughts, inability to organize her thoughts, memory problems, anxiety, and insomnia. Her insight and judgment were documented as limited. So those were all the reasons that she was admitted for. However, in the lawsuit, it states that her care that she received was grossly inadequate. Mm-hmm. This was testified differently during the trial. But this is where we're at in the lawsuit, that she was admitted on New Year's Eve and there was a skeleton crew because of the holiday. Patients spent their evening doing puzzles and coloring. Nurses stayed behind a desk and glass. Lindsay did not see a doctor until January 3rd, 3 days after admission. Again, testimony says otherwise, but this is what's listed in the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Lindsay was discharged from McLean Hospital on January 5th after only a 5-day stay. Dr. Goodhart authored and signed the physician discharge summary approving her release despite her documented limited insight, judgment, and suicidal ideations. After discharge, Dr. Goodhart from McLean called Lindsay and spoke for only 10 minutes, offering names of antidepressants. The staff at McLean suggested amitriptyline, which is a very class of medications that Lindsay has been known to have adverse reactions to. This is where she had a thought that's quoted in the lawsuit of, I was just in the best hospital in the country, so there was not much hope.
Oh, that's very deflating. I don't think Lindsay's the first and she won't be the last. Who have reached out for help because of severe symptoms and just felt like, well, I just exhausted all my options and there's no hope for me. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our mental health system is that way. It's very upsetting to feel that way.
It says continued deterioration under the care of Dr. Tufts. So she had gone back to Dr. Tufts after leaving McLean, which we had talked about in part one. And it's stating here that on the day after McLean, so on January 6th, Tufts diagnosed Lindsay with chronic major depressive disorder, single episode moderate. She recorded that Lindsay's psychiatric condition was deteriorating and that her medication was not effective. Despite her poor condition, Dr. Tufts met with Lindsay for only 17 minutes. Mm-hmm. She returns to Dr. Tufts on January 10th and switched to Valium. Dr. Tufts indicated that at this point, at some point, we will add an antidepressant and do a benzodiazepine taper. At so things point. Are just, yeah. On January 16th, in the lawsuit, it's on this date, January 16th, that Lindsay was still experiencing debilitating depression. She had to force herself to do anything. Hallucinations continued. These are auditory hallucinations. This is where it's quoted, "You should harm the children. You should kill yourself. You will never be the same. The only option is to die." She felt like a zombie. Dr. Tufts prescribed amitriptyline. Yet again, another antidepressant. The day before the murders took place, Lindsay saw Dr. Tufts on January 23rd. She was appearing a little more anxious with racing heart, more AM anxiety. Dr. Tufts recorded Lindsay's mood as the same, flat, anxious, that she had no motivation and numb and had to force herself up and out of the house. Her sleep and medication efficacy were poor, her insight was poor, and her psychiatric condition was generally unchanged. This is where her recommendation was, let's increase the amitriptyline. And Lindsay got no sleep that night.
Oh.
Then it gets into, in the lawsuit, the facts of January 24th, which are all facts that I did in part one. So we're not going to go over that because that was tough enough to get through.
Sure was.
So this is a very detailed lawsuit. And then the last part, to summarize it up, it goes again. It starts talking about where the defendants failed and where they violated the standard of care. And so this is where, when this lawsuit comes to court, which I believe it's been recommended for a jury trial, this is where they will recommend, where they will have to defend the standard of care and kind of go into that aspect. They've been trying to not introduce the standard of care in the criminal court case that's going on right now. So they talk about a few things that the standard of care required the defendants to obtain a complete psychiatric history, including detailed inquiry into Lindsay's mood and symptoms during and after prior pregnancies. Had any of the providers done so, they would have learned of the hypomanic episodes that followed her second and third deliveries, which were critical indicators of bipolar disorder postpartum onset. The standard of care required defendants to recognize that Lindsay's severe adverse reaction to Zoloft, characterized by activation, worsening insomnia, and racing thoughts, was a red flag for bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
The standard of care further required that after a second antidepressant, Prozac, caused similar activation, defendants should have diagnosed bipolar disorder and prescribed a mood stabilizer rather than continuing to try antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
It goes into talk about adequate testing, should they have done blood levels, drawing that, looking at that, looking at our metabolization. We also go into the standard of care required defendants to coordinate care amongst themselves and with other treating providers. Instead, the providers failed to communicate with one another, and Nurse Delotta did not even return the women and infants call to discuss Lindsay's care. Again, whether or not that's been proven, it's in the lawsuit. She testifies that she never got a phone call, but and so who knows? But that is something that's been a big discussion. And again, one of the problems with our healthcare industry is that providers can, it's very, either they don't collaborate with one another, or if they try, it's very difficult because that's they're not the part of the same organization, right?
Yeah.
Like you taking care of your patients, you have to seek records from outside places, right? And oftentimes I'm assuming you're waiting for them if you can
Absolutely.
Even get them to consult for them.
And it can be a huge pain in the ass. And it, like I said in the first part, this was a woman who really reached out for help and she was very service connected. And there were, at the end of the day, a lot of hands in the pot, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and nobody was communicating with one another. And that, I think, is a pretty huge dent in her care overall. Yep.
So the lawsuit ends up with the counts of what they're seeking and what counts they're going with. And so count one is negligence, medical malpractice, personal injury. It's Lindsay against all the defendants, basically alleging that, you know, that everything was negligent and malpractice, and it led to mm-hmm. her injuries that she sustained with her suicide attempt. That's her personal injury.
Right.
They're saying it's a direct and proximate result of the negligence. Lindsay suffered severe personal injuries, including but not limited to the loss of her children, the mm-hmm. development of severe postpartum psychosis, a thoracic spinal cord injury resulting in permanent paralysis below the sternum, multiple fractures, and so on. Count two, and this is a term that I'm not familiar with, again, because I'm not legal, but it's loss of parental consortium. But basically, it's because the loss of her children. The loss of her children okay. and that parental experience
role
mm-hmm. exactly as a direct result of the negligence, recklessness, and of the defendants, she suffered and will continue to suffer the complete and permanent loss of companionship, consortium services, society, comfort, guidance, counsel, and advice of her children, Cora, Dawson, and Callan.
Mm-hmm.
Count three, loss of spousal consortium. Because she got her husband filed for divorce after this. So she no longer has a husband. And then count four, vicarious liability. This is against the systems itself, not so much the doctors, but the plaintiff incorporates by referencing all of this to the healthcare systems in itself that the doctors were employed through.
Gotcha.
So her attorney for this is Rosemary Scapiccio, which her name's been in the news. Apparently she's a badass.
Oh.
So next to Kevin Reddington, who's the number one defense attorney in the state of Massachusetts, this lady is right behind him. And I want to learn more about her. Mm-hmm. But apparently she's got quite the history as well, as far as getting convictions overturned and getting, you know, a lot of troubling mental health lawsuits through the system. So she's definitely got a team there. So that's, again, a lot on the Lindsay Clancy. We don't have a verdict. We almost had a mistrial, which mm-hmm. meant we couldn't have a verdict. And like I said, nobody wants that. So we'll see. You know, I don't think we're going to do a part three. I think we're just going to leave this at the part two. And I think we're just going to do a post of, you know,
what
everyone else is going to do with the outcome. Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I can see it going either way.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe the prosecution proved, again, it's not up to the defense. It's up to those two prosecutors. And do I think that they proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Lindsay did this with exact premeditation and knowing what she was trying to do and planned it? No.
No. Yeah.
I'm going on record saying that I don't think they proved their case.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. But I'm not a juror.
Right. Exactly. Thankfully, we can just speculate.
I'm the 19th juror.
You're the 19th juror. We are probably all of TikTok is the 19th
line, I was going to say, probably in line behind thousands of others. So.
Yep, exactly. There's a lot of lawyers and investigators that are assisting in this case.
At the end of the day,
that are online.
At the end of the day, you know, the focus needs to be on Cora, Dawson, and Callan, who are no longer here with us because of multiple failures.
Yep.
Failures by mom, failures by dad, failures by health system, failures by other families who didn't speak up, couldn't have done enough. Again, I don't want to victim blame on anybody, but everybody in those children's lives failed them and in mm-hmm. their parents' lives failed them. So,
For sure.
And they're not here because of that.
Yep.
And Lindsay's verdict will be the right verdict because it was done judiciously through our system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, we have a jury for a reason.
We do.
You know, the jury will decide what that fate is.
That's right.
So.
Oh, boy. I am so curious to see how this will play out.
And the hope is that we'll have closing arguments tomorrow or Wednesday.
Right. Yeah.
Then it's going to get to the jury. And who knows how long it's going to take them to deliver. Maybe they're all on the same page that immediately they're like, within a day, we all agree there's no mm-hmm. smoking gun, that it's reasonable, that they don't have reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it could go on for a long time.
Exactly.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yep. So. Who knows? Yeah. Well, yeah. Devin, you did an excellent job. I so appreciate you just immersing yourself in this and taking the time to really understand it and understand the different opinions and the different facts. And you did a great job. What a sad
case. Thanks, Mama. It is a sad case. It's heartbreaking.
It really is. It really is.
Some days have been just really hard to watch. Really hard to watch. Really, the whole thing is so hard to fathom,
absolutely,
you know, and to comprehend how it got there. I just hope everybody does better.
Yeah. You know? Me too.
I think even if she, I think for those of us in the medical industry, let's say, okay, let's just say that maybe she's found criminally responsible of first degree murder, right? And she's found guilty. Let's just say the providers win the lawsuit. That does not mean that there is not something that can be learned from this or that we could do better on. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know how either one of those cases is going to turn about, but let's just say premeditation, she planned it, she knew what she was doing, and the providers proved that they had the standard of care. That standard of care sucks.
Yeah,
I'm just
going
to say. Like, there's still more that we could do that's better. Right?
And maybe, maybe the light that this has shed on postpartum mental health as a whole and our mental health system, which obviously needs a lot of work, maybe a positive outcome from all of this, if there is such a thing, is that one person and their family can be spared an event like this. You know, it, it makes it, it would make it worthwhile to go through all of this if we can prevent this from happening to one more family.
100%. 100. Yeah, there's no, there's no better way to say that for sure. So I just think regardless of what happens, there's something that can be taken from it, and we need to take, we need to take it, and we need to do action.
Use
on
it. Yeah. This isn't, this is, this was a horrible tragedy, but it's also an opportunity as a community, as caregivers, as people who give healthcare every day, as people who document every day, as people who pour their entire lives into being a healthcare professional in whatever capacity, to just do better and to listen harder and to be more vigilant if it's at all possible.
All of that. All of that. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. You can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube, Med Crimes Podcast.
You can search for us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
You can send us any crazy stories, suggestions, any ideas for episode stories, or if you want things to be part of our break room banter, because believe it or not, it's fall now.
It's fall now.
And break room banter will be coming.
It is.
At medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there, guys. We love you.
Toodles.
Bye.